Welcome to The Dyad Presents, a video game music podcast. I'm The Dyad, and this is a double dose of Street Jam. Last week I mentioned that I was going to try playing more music, and here I am, doubling up right off the bat. Honestly, it's partially because it isn't going to take long for me to exhaust my knowledge about the game Street Jam, and that would make it a little harder to play another track in the future. Although I do like to talk about the most tangentially related things I can think of, like maybe history of basketball? I don't know, I'll think about it. Anyway, from what I was able to find, Street Jam is an unreleased 3-on-3 basketball arcade game. It was made by Jaleco, and it was composed by Yasuyuki Suzuki, and possibly some others. The first track is simply called BGM 5, while the second is BGM 1. To be honest, I was digging pretty deep to find even that much information, so I don't have a lot more to say about the songs. And Jaleco doesn't have great SEO on the term Street Jam either. Try putting that into Google. For a while I was even convinced that the songs had been misattributed. Eventually, I discovered that the game never saw the light of day. I don't know if it's the complete soundtrack, but 6 tracks appear on the Mega 4-disc game music album called Super ROM Cassette Disc Angelico. Simply titled BGMs 1 through 6, these are some pretty cool jams. I'm pretty intrigued by the CD. The Street Jams tracks are numbers 437 through 442, so there's obviously a huge cachet of sweet tracks. Moving on though, the next track comes from the PC Engine / TurboGrafx-16. Actually, I don't think it came out in North America, so just PC Engine on this one. And also, it's a little short, so I might let it loop a couple times before I come back. It's from the game Takeda Shingen. According to the Video Game Music Preservation Foundation website and their list of games without audio credits, the composer for this soundtrack is unknown. This is BGM 7. Takeda Shingen is a side-scrolling brawler originally released for the arcade. Another Jalico offering, it was later converted to the PC Engine by ICOM. There's also an NES strategy game in the same name, but the two games are unrelated. Well, they're both loosely based on a historical figure, I guess. Takeda Shingen was born Takeda Harunobu in 1521. He was born in what is now known as the Yamashita Prefecture in Japan. He was a daimyo, which is a feudal lord, and he was also one of the most famous military leaders in Japanese history. He was active during the Sengoku, or Warring States, period of civil unrest in Japan, and Takeda fought a series of battles with Uesugi Kenshin, which are exceedingly popular in Japanese folklore and drama. The first weekend of every April, there is a Takeda Shingen festival in the town of Kofu. Generally, a famous actor plays the role of Takeda Shingen. He's the subject of a number of video games and anime series, and has appeared in a character in Akira Kurosawa's movie Kagemusha. I guess what I'm trying to say is, this guy's a big deal. And interestingly enough, one of the composers I've played on the show is a descendant of Takeda Shingen. That's right, from episode 5, shoutouts to Hector, Ryu Umemoto is a lineal relative, and how can I possibly ignore that connection? So I'm going to play something from him next. In reading a bit more about this, I was saddened to learn that Umemoto passed away in the year 2011 at the age of 37 from chronic bronchitis. Umemoto is responsible for a number of great soundtracks, especially on my newly beloved PC-98, including two favorites, you know, A Girl Who Chants Love at the Bound of This World, and Ground Seed. I have a Ground Seed track planned for an upcoming themed episode, in fact. But instead, I'm going to play something that matches the mood a little better. From the PC-98 game Xenon Mugen no Shitai, composed by Ryu Umemoto, this is the title theme. Thank you. track is a little intense, but it's a good one, and it feels right. I've been really enjoying Umemoto's work recently, and I was genuinely saddened to learn of his passing. Umemoto was a self-taught musician. He was influenced by the band Yellow Magic Orchestra and by his fellow game composer Yuzo Koshiro. I think a lot of that comes across in his work. He was also a practitioner of Zen Buddhism, and it's said to be an influence on his work as well. Sometime maybe I'll talk about my own experience staying in a Zen Buddhist temple in Japan. It was an incredibly awesome experience, and I can see how it would have far-reaching impacts on your life. Umemoto worked for FamilySoft, a company I briefly discussed the last time we heard a track from him. He eventually ended up freelancing, and that's how he came to work on his first major Seasware project, the game Xenon. Seasware is an incredibly cumbersome name of a game company, by the way. Not to be confused with the 1988 vertical scrolling shooter developed by the Bitmap Brothers, the Seasware Xenon is an eroge space station adventure game. Again, eroge is the adult video game genre. I read that Umemoto was working under incredible time restraints when he was composing for these games, too. As little as 2 months to finish a complete soundtrack, and while working on multiple games simultaneously. The version of the song that I played is the Yamaha YM2608 OPNA PC9801 version. OPNA, or maybe OPNA, is just a nickname for the Yamaha YM2608 sound chip. It's a member of Yamaha's OPN family of FM synth chips, and it's used in both the PC88 and 98 computers. Moving on, we're gonna hear from the ZX Spectrum, and old Specky has a real doozy in store for us. Tim Fallon getting real noodly. From the game Solar Invasion, this is the title theme. We'll be right back. Solar Invasion is a 1989 space shooter published by Mastertronic Limited. The game supported the Magnum Light Phaser, a light gun hardware add-on akin to the NES's Zapper. While there were a limited number of games for the ZX Spectrum that actually made use of the light guns, four different versions were made for the system. The Cheetah Defender, the Magnum Light Phaser, Sinclair's own version of the Magnum with their logo on it, and the Stack Light Rifle. And now, a brief history of light guns. The first light guns actually debuted back in the 1930s, obviously not on video games. Following the development of light-sensing vacuum tubes, the first game to make use of the technology was called Rayolite, and was developed by Seaberg, a company that made parts for jukeboxes. The targets had sensors on them, and the gun emitted a ray of light. When the player hit a target, a point was scored. The technology evolved, and in 1966, Sega released the first electromechanical game called Periscope. Electromechanical games typically use simple electric circuits to move physical objects in order to simulate a game. They're considered an evolution of slot machines, pinball tables, and the ever-popular in Japan, pachinko machines, as well as purely mechanical games. They mainly rose to prominence after the end of World War II. The first home console light gun game was Shooting Gallery on the Magnavox Odyssey, released in 1972. The light gun itself was an enormous mock-up shotgun. The size, paired with the fact that it only worked with the Magnavox TV, did not earn it much popularity. Light gun games saw their largest bump in popularity with the release of the aforementioned Duck Hunt. The game came out in 1985 in North America. So how do they work? Light guns are generally made up of a photodiode and a trigger. They work by receiving light through the photodiode, which is usually on or in the barrel, and they use that light to figure out where on the TV screen you're aiming. When you pull the trigger, the computer blacks out the screen for one frame, and the light gun diode begins reception. The game uses the light sensor to sample the black color it's reading from your TV to give it a reference point. The next frame, the computer flashes a solid white block around the targets you're supposed to be shooting at. The photodiode detects the change in light intensity and tells the computer that it's pointed at a lit target block, meaning you hit a target. The technology actually becomes more elaborate and more accurate when you get into the Super Scope and other light pens, but we can put that on ice for now. As for why they don't work with modern TVs, the short version is, there's a slight latency that throws off the programming. A CRT TV hooked up to an analog NES has very reliable timing. For normal viewing, a few milliseconds doesn't really affect anything noticeably, but when it comes down to precise frames, it just doesn't work right. And that's actually going to do it for me this week. Unfortunately, my daughter just got sick, and we're still dealing with it right now. I just put her to bed, as a matter of fact. It's obviously taken precedence over my recording, so it might be a little bit shorter for an episode than typical, but I'd rather release a short episode than miss a week if I can help it. My last track comes from the Genesis, and it's definitely a perfect one to go out on. It's a staff roll track, so it has that nice conclusion at the end. But before I go, you can follow the show at thedyadpresents.blogspot.com. You can subscribe via your favorite podcatcher, and don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. Those who do are the true heroes. You can follow me on Twitter at thedyad, and you can email me at thedyadpresents@gmail.com. There's also a Facebook page you can find by searching for the name of the podcast, or by searching for @thedyad. Until next time, composed by Yoshinori Kawamoto, from the Sega Genesis, from the game Philios, this is the staff role.